Welcome to the scorching arena of valor and the crucible of courage. This is the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Here in the inferno of life's greatest challenges, heroes are shaped and legends are born. Every episode is a torchlight of wisdom, casting a glow on the paths walked by those who've braved the flames and emerged stronger. In this furnace of fortitude, we'll explore tales of resilience, bravery, and the unyielding human spirit. Each guest brings their own spark of insight, lighting up the darkness and guiding us through the smoke of adversity. With Fireman Rob at the helm, prepared to delve into conversations that smolder with significance and stories that kindle the soul. It's not just a podcast, it's a beacon for all who seek to rise from the ashes and glow with purpose. So stoke the fires of your curiosity and ready your heart for tales of triumph and transformation. The flames are roaring. The stage is ablaze. Welcome to the Forged in the Fires podcast. Let the journey begin.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's guest, amazing author, great speaker, a great coach, somebody who has been through something that most of us would never want to go through, but came out on the other side and is helping individuals to understand things more greatly and come back with like a positive productivity. Sandra Younger, thank you so much for joining me today.
Rob, thank you for inviting me. It's just a privilege to be here.
Oh, it's so awesome to see what you've done. I mean, I want to go back in time because this is kind of where that first book came from. Mm-hmm. But you lost your home, 12 neighbors, and almost lost your own life in 2003 in the Cedar Fire. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't know what the Cedar Fire is, but I'd love for you to kind of give me an idea of what that was like for you in that moment, and then we can kind of go from there.
We first saw the Cedar Fire in the middle of the night across the canyon from us. We live on a mountainside near San Diego, east of San Diego. We didn't know it was coming. It was moving so far, so fast that all evacuation efforts were sort of moot by the time it got to us. So we woke up to the sight of fire outside our window. That's where the name of my book came from, The Fire Outside My Window. And we knew we needed to be gone already. And we grabbed animals and a few photographs and jumped in the closest car and headed out.
Wow.
This was October 2023. And you'll know, as a firefighter, we were in the midst of Santa Ana winds, yeah, which are seasonal winds that can blow 40, 50 miles an hour and, of course, just carry any spark for miles and miles. And that's what was happening. And we drove out literally through fire. Oof. I got to one point where the smoke was so thick I could not see the road. And I was yelling, I can't see the road. And my husband, who wanted to be driving, but we couldn't find the keys to his car. We were in my little Acura coupe. We left his big Suburban SUV in the driveway. There was a reason, but boy, we couldn't see it then. And I said, I can't see the road. And he said, well, just don't wreck the car. Which sounds like a typically male statement. But what he meant, of course, was do not drive off the side of this mountain. So just at that moment, Rob, came this miraculous intervention. A bobcat jumped out of the brush beside us, right to my headlight, and dashed off into the smoke. And something in me knew that the cat was on the road and that I should follow it. And that's how we stayed on the road and negotiated through this fire on both sides of us for about a mile until we punched through this final curtain of flame into clear night. And of course, we had to keep running, but that's how we escaped this Cedar Fire, which for 14 years was the biggest recorded wildfire in California history. And that's saying a lot. Has since been documented as one of the first of this new breed of modern mega fires that we're seeing for many reasons, chief among them, climate change.
That's crazy.
Now, it was a crazy night, yes.
I have to go and ask you, from the standpoint of somebody who had never been, like, you hadn't been in fires before, I'm guessing.
No.
And you hadn't, that wasn't your, like, MO, like, driving cars through flames and smoke. That wasn't your job, right?
It was not my job. It was not in even my wildest imagination. And some people have said, gosh, you were so brave to drive that car. And I said, you know, there was no option there. You do what you have to do. There was no staying because the fire was right there at our house when we left. Wow. And it's amazing what you can do when you have to, when you're in survival mode.
Right. And in your mindset at the time, do you remember moments of it where, like, you were like thinking that it was the end, or were you thinking that I can do this. I can get through this. I'm going to keep on the road, husband, but I'm going to do this.
I never thought it was the end. I did think about the gas tank that was suspended under my car when I was driving across these rivers of flames that were just running across the road. And I kept thinking, maybe it's like when you run your finger through a candle flame. If you keep going fast, it won't burn you. But I was solely focused on finding the way out of there, on staying on the road. We have about half a mile of a dirt road in our neighborhood off the main paved road that runs through our community, Wildcat Canyon Road. And I was solely focused on finding Wildcat Canyon Road. And we couldn't see, of course, very far ahead at all in the smoke. So we were both working on it. Bob was saying left, right, you know, and I was bouncing off the edge of the road. And by the time we got out, my bumper was popped out and the back end of my car was scorched, which as a firefighter, you know, is not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. No, it's not.
My firefighter friends told me later, well, you know, when we get scorched in a fire, we just feel like that's a near-death experience.
Yeah, we did a bad thing. You said you were trying to find, what was the road? Wildcat?
Wildcat Canyon Road is the road that runs up and down this this area where we live. It's the only way in or out. Which is also not the best choice in real estate, I would say to anyone today.
But a bobcat led you out, though. That's the weirdest thing on Wildcat Road.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
And your husband's name is Bob.
My husband is Bob.
It was really kind of, I mean, I'm seeing all of these things coming together. Mm-hmm. This is great. It's kind of weird. Like it.
It's more than weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It is. Do you feel that now with everything that you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel that there was some reason that you were meant to be here still, that for you were sure. meant to punch through?
For sure. There were 12 people who died in Wildcat Canyon within a mile of us, and they were doing the same things we were doing at the same time.
Right.
At one point, Rob, I started thinking back to if this or that little circumstance had gone differently, we wouldn't have gotten out. And I made a list of about 30 things.
Wow.
And then I just kind of got the shivers and stopped. But the bobcat was, of course, the most dramatic example. But there were so many other things that could have easily gone one way or the other. Why did we even wake up? We didn't even know why until about 3 years later, when I finally got around in the interviews I did to write the book about the fire. I interviewed one of our neighbors, and he told us that he had gotten some advance notice on the fire from people he knew in the area, and we hadn't lived here long enough to know them. But he knew, and he was leaving. And as he was leaving, he said he sat at the top of our driveway and blew his horn for as long as he felt he could stay because he could see the fire was getting there. And then he drove away. And as he looked back, he saw a light come on in our house. So that's weird too, right? You know, we have a friend who is a captain in the Navy.
Yeah.
And he said to me at one time, he said, "No, I don't want to get all religious about this, Sandra, but that bobcat, there was something going on there."
There was something going on. There was something going on. That's crazy. Yeah,
I just felt like it was a gift. It was a gift that we got out. And I was a career journalist at the time. I was editing a magazine. And it took me about 20 minutes to realize that I was the storyteller who came out of the worst part of this then worst fire anybody could remember. And it was clearly my job to tell the story. Somehow I knew it was going to be a historic fire. Somehow I knew that that it was my job to tell it, just like I knew to follow the bobcat.
Right.
So there was a sort of cosmic, supernatural, spiritual component to this whole experience. And I believe that when something is dropped right in front of you that way, you better pick it up and run with it.
Exactly. And you did pick it up and run with it. SandraYounger.com and find this book. I want to talk about this book because, like you mentioned it before, The Fire Outside My Window.
Right.
When was the first moment when you figured, you know, I need to write not just about this fire and also to honor the victims, but I also need to really focus on that human spirit and that capacity to triumph over adversity, to find that potential. How did that come into your mind?
I lived into that part of it. I did know, as I just mentioned, that I needed to write a book about this.
Right.
I'd always thought before, I'm a journalist. I'm a career journalist. I've got 2 degrees in journalism. I should write a book. But I never found a topic that interested me enough to keep with it that long. I thought, I better stick to magazine stories because they're short. But I knew I needed to write a book and not to tell just our story. It wasn't just a memoir. It was the whole story of the fire. So I did over 150 interviews to get there. And in the process, of course, we're rebooting our lives. We're rebuilding our house.
Yeah.
And we stumbled into these principles of resilience that I now share with other people. And I realized this much early on, that there was a choice in how you respond to any sort of adversity, in this particular adversity. I saw it as a choice that there was this sort of new land out in front of us now that we never expected to find ourselves in. Like, I never expected to find myself driving down a mountain through smoke and fire.
Right.
And it had all sorts of opportunities I knew that I couldn't see, but I had been put into this new place on a new path. And it was my choice whether I wanted to travel the new path and see what the new opportunities were, or to just stay where I was and be bitter and call myself a victim because everybody else was calling me a victim.
Yeah.
And I sort of saw it, this may sound a little, you know, corny, but I saw it as one of those fairy tales where you're just traipsing along through the woods and you think, oh, that's pretty over there. Let's go across this bridge and see it. And this troll hops out from under the bridge and said, okay, but you got to pay the toll. And you ask, what is the toll? And the troll, taking the toll, says, it's everything you own. You got to give me everything you own, your house, everything in it. Right?
Wow. Yeah.
And you would say, I don't think so. I think I'll go some other way. But if that toll had already been paid and that much was no longer your choice, who wouldn't want to go into that land of opportunity and see what was there? So I did see that early on, that there was a choice to be made. And later, as I did my interviews and I found people who did see themselves as victims, and it didn't seem to matter how much they had or how little they had lost in the fire, I realized that is a choice. You can choose to be a victim forever if you want to be, or you can choose to be a survivor. And survivors have this funny way of evolving into thrivers and sometimes givers and changers, sharing what they've learned with others. So that was my choice. And it was something that I saw early on, but I had to evolve into experientially.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I mean, when I, you know, looking on your website, when the new book that you have, The Comeback Formula, The Resilience Building Guidebook, the background.
That's a freebie. Anybody can download that on my website at sandrayounger.com.
I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting part, though, is in the background, the background image is your house after the fire.
Yeah. In the old book. In the new book, which I've just released, it's The Fire Outside My Window 20th Anniversary Edition. Yeah. I put a new cover on it because I never liked the idea of having the dead house on the cover. That was my publisher's decision.
Yeah.
I wanted to focus on resilience.
I like that. Yeah.
So I took the rights back from my publisher because they didn't want to do anything more with the book. And I thought this book is more relevant than ever.
Right.
It's still the only book, Rob, that I know that tells the stories of both the civilians and the firefighters. And it's resonant because of this climate driven or climate affected mega fires we're seeing all over the world. So I took the rights back. One of my friends said, "You did a Taylor Swift." And I said, "I did." You don't want to do anything with my book, my story? Let me have the rights back and I will republish it. So it is out there now without the dead house on the cover, just the fire.
I love that because it's almost that signification of that you've moved past that trauma, that burned up what was into that new fire, that passion that burns inside you to create this comeback and this resilience. How do you translate that when you're talking to emergency managers or when you're talking to individuals who have went through something as devastating and as in essence life-changing as you did? How do you give them that feeling of yes, right now may be something you may feel like that dead house in the background, but you have that ability to come back. What is that message that you give to them?
I'm always in awe when I have the privilege of speaking to responders and emergency managers, emergency professionals of any kind, because I was in the fire for maybe 30 minutes.
Right.
And you people in the fire service and in the emergency field are in it all the time. And it creates enormous trauma. Yeah. And especially because most of you go into that field with big hearts wanting to help people and make a difference. So how I first approach it is with humility and gratitude. And I say, thank you for letting me be here. And thank you for being interested in hearing my story, because I'm not an emergency professional. I'm one of those people on the other side of the doors that you knock on. Right. And then I just share my story. That's all I can share. And I share what I learned as I realized that resilience was a choice. And as I looked into that and found that resilience is not a finite commodity that we're born with more or less of, but resilience is a skill set that we can build like a muscle. And I share with them the five things that are in that free download on my website, The Comeback Formula, the very powerful but common sense practices that are proven by experience and a lot of scientific study, actually, to build resilience. And there are things like gratitude and patience and connection. One thing I love to say to responders is be tough enough to ask for help when you need it. Accept help that's offered to you and be tough enough to ask for help, because it's hard to call 911 when you are 911, right?
Exactly. That's a great point.
The way that I communicate it is by sharing the hero's journey, which you may be familiar about. I don't know, but it's a it's sort of a universal story format that we see in all the blockbuster movies of the hero who goes out to, you know, called from an ordinary village, goes out to slay some dragon or some threat, and is almost killed in the process, but survives with the help of a mentor or guide and a posse. And then comes back to the village with a gift for the village, having slain the dragon. And I say, look, you wouldn't go out on a call without your posse. You wouldn't just go freelancing without asking your captain or your chief what the orders are. So why would you do the same for your own mental? And I actually don't use the word mental health. I use the word emotional resilience.
Nice. Yeah,
I think it's true. Mental health has such a stigma. And I think our first priority in speaking with responders and anyone else who lives in trauma because of their job is to get rid of the stigma. That's the other thing that I do. I say to the leaders in the audience, as leaders, I hope that you are making it okay for your team and your organization to admit when they could use some help. And so I just try to surface it and make it more normal to talk about it.
That's so powerful in that respect of making it more normal. And from what you went through, I think it's so powerful to be able to have that voice, because a lot of times it's so hard in the first responder community and with individuals who have went through trauma, that when somebody else talks to them, who they maybe look at their background and their experience and like, that's great that you want to tell me stuff, but what I went through was so much more difficult, or it's that constant judging or figuring out where you fit within that society. Have you found that as you progressed in your time, that you've gotten more open to like hearing those other, because you coach also as well, right?
I do. And let me ask you right here, Rob, you'll need to edit this part out, but are you hearing this beeping that started where I am?
I can hear that. Yeah.
Is that going to be a deal breaker here?
No, you're totally fine.
Don't know what it is and how to turn it off.
It's a backup alarm.
I don't. I mean, it might be a fire alarm. How appropriate. Okay.
That was
sorry for that aside.
No, that was good. No, it's totally fine. I like this. This is normal conversation.
Can you repeat the question?
So as you're coaching, so like everybody that goes through like the traumas and the challenges in their life, as you see it as a coach, is it a different thing that you have your own personal challenge that you went through? Is it easier to relate to those individuals who are going through those challenges? Because I think that's a lot of times the problem in first responders is that we go and they can't relate to what I've been through.
Mm-hmm. I think any sort of trauma or loss that we go through makes us more understanding and compassionate to others. I did go out and get certified as a coach because I found I was doing a lot of coach-like work after speaking to responders and to disaster survivors and to at-risk communities, all three of those audiences. As a coach, it's all about the other person's experience and the other person's agenda. Yeah. So I don't often say, I hear you. Let me tell you my story. I don't do that as a coach. Even though
that's great advice.
I mean, you've known me for 20 minutes. You can imagine I would do that in any other circumstance. But as a coach, that's been the hardest thing to learn, is to draw out the other person. And of course, that's where your understanding and your personal experience helps, because you have more of an insight into what they might be feeling, but not recognizing. And so you can ask powerful questions and make observations as a coach that would perhaps surface those types of thoughts and emotions that they're likely to be having.
That's great. I love the way that you put that, because that's so powerful. And I think a lot of people need to hear that, especially because of the side of empathy. you know, there's so much value in empathy, especially when dealing with trauma and coaching people through it. I love the way that you put that, is like you're able to utilize what your experiences are to help you in coaching, but you're not telling them your story, right?
Sure. I mean, they're going to probably know a bit of my story.
Oh, they will.
Anyway, you know, and I hope so, because that my story is my credibility with these audiences, yes. You know. Yep. So I do use that as a platform, but not as a point of conversation within a coaching session.
No, I love that. So when you look back at your experiences and you look at where you are now, what is that feeling that you have about being able to be this impact, being able to be this in essence change maker in people's lives?
What comes up first is always gratitude. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not only a more resilient person as a result of my fire experience 20 years ago, but a more grateful person. And isn't that a coincidence that come to gratitude is the first step of the comeback formula?
It's crazy. It's like you planned this.
It's almost like somebody planned it for me. But I am grateful that I have something to talk about with you and your listeners. And I'm grateful that I can offer them hope and optimism in a time that seems overwrought with negativity and despair.
Right.
I'm just so grateful that I have something to offer at this stage in my life, because I am a grandmother now, and I'm at a point where a lot of people are just slowing down, and I'm thinking, no, this is prime time. I just gotta push to the end, right? You don't stop the marathon at 24 miles if you can help it.
You just ramp it up.
Crawling. Yeah. So I'm very happy I was able to relaunch this book under my own label, and also as a special 20th anniversary edition that puts that fire in the historic position and framework that we can now see with that hindsight. And I think that I have used it, and especially the new introduction that I've added, to highlight those lessons that I learned from the fire about resilience. So I'm just thrilled and grateful that I can have this opportunity.
I love it. I love it. Well, make sure you go to sandrayounger.com. You can find out more about her speaking, her coaching. You can also find her books on there. And like you said before, you can download free that amazing book that I just did.
The Comeback Formula.
The Comeback Formula. It's awesome. It's awesome.
SandraYounger.com.
I always end the same way. So are you ready?
I've
got three questions for you. Okay. Shoot. All right. So if you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
You're going to be okay.
That's a good one. I like that. All right. The second one, everybody's going through challenges and struggles in their life, and some are bigger, some are smaller, but they're all personal challenges. What would you give somebody two habits that they can incorporate into their daily life that can continue to help them to push forward, to live forward?
I think that first one would be to live in gratitude.
Yeah.
Find something, no matter how small, how minute, to be grateful for, because that shifts our mindset to see the opportunities that are out there. And the other one I think might be, do what's yours to do. Don't feel like you have to save the world, but what's yours to do is going to show up right in the middle of your path. You won't have to look for it. And that's going to be enough. That's going to be more than enough, whatever it is, how big or little it seems. So live in gratitude and be open to do what's yours to do in the world.
That's perfect.
Don't worry about what other people.
This last one's going to be fun.
Okay.
So if you could have a coffee at a firehouse table, so in other words, you can ask any question.
Gosh, I'd love that.
Yeah. With three people, they can be deceased or alive. Who would those three be?
Oh, gosh. Oh. Oh, out of all the people who have ever lived.
Yes. See, I just put you right on the spot.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? Oh, my gosh. Well, I have some questions for Jesus, so I'd want him in there.
I like that.
I think Queen Elizabeth the First. The first.
Oh, okay.
She was always my childhood hero because she was a powerful woman and her sense of style was off the hook. And who else would it be? Maybe. Who rounds it out? I think I might want to talk to my great grandmother who lived in Lithuania and I have no idea who she was. Or what her life was like.
Oh, that'd be amazing. That's a good group. I like what you just did there.
Yeah. It's a little, two women and one man, and the man is Jesus. That's probably not what you were looking for, Rob.
Sandra, I am not ever looking for anything on that question. I just love the answers that I get. That's all that matters.
That's crazy. I mean, there's so many other people I would love, love, love to talk with, right?
Exactly. Well,
and a lot of them are in the fire service, and I do get to talk to them. So, There you go.
You don't even need to worry about having coffee with them then.
That's right.
Well, it's been such an honor and a privilege to have you on today, and definitely keep doing the amazing things that you're doing.
What a joy, Fireman Rob. I want to say the same thing right back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, and make sure you go to sandrayounger.com. You can find out more about her speaking, her coaching, as well as her books. Thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to you next time. Awesome, Sandra. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And please share this episode with a friend or family member. To find out more about Fireman Rob, or if you have a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.